Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and Chuck's here too, and so's Jerry, and this is Stuff You Should Know.
I don't have a shirt on.
That's cool. I don't have pants on.
I probably should have told you that before we got going, but, or not at all.
That is definitely the state that we're in these days. It's totally fine that you're not wearing a shirt while we're recording.
I went to put one on, and then I was like, why?
That's a great question to ask yourself every morning, really.
By the way, we should point out, I just noticed, I don't even think I told you this, but I noticed today I got, I always have a Google search setting for Stuff You Should Know when that pops up. And it popped up that our board game is for sale on Amazon.com.
Again, finally, it came back in, huh?
I guess so, and it's on sale, so it's like 20% off even. If anyone wants it, we should point out, I looked at the negative reviews. This is not Trivial Pursuit. This is a completely different Stuff You Should Know game that Trivial Pursuit loved and wanted to co-brand. So as far as the one-star reviews that say, this doesn't work with my Trivial Pursuit board.
I've tried to mash them together.
But it's out there again, I think, if people are interested in that.
Yeah. Hopefully they are. I didn't realize that was a plug until about halfway through.
You were still thinking me without a shirt.
I thought there was some story. I thought there was some story coming out of it. And then I was like, oh, I see where he's going with this.
No, I noticed that this morning. So I thought I'd mention before we get into what will admittedly be a bit of a freewheeling discussion. I think on Alien First Contact, this one didn't quite fit into our what we like to do, which is sort of a tighter beginning, middle, end type of thing. So I think this will be a little more freewheeling. And yeah, I'm fine with that.
It's actually super appropriate because that's basically the same insouciant attitude that humanity has shown toward the possibility of having to communicate with aliens thus far.
Yeah,
well, maybe freewheeling, that's why. You know? Yeah. It's just kind of like, yeah, we'll figure that out on the fly after it happens kind of thing. And that's really, I mean, in some ways it's like, well, yeah, I mean, why would we waste any time figuring out what we're going to say to aliens if we're not even certain that aliens exist? But in another way, if you look at it, you can say, like, that is extraordinarily irresponsible. And, like, really, how much time and resource and money would it take to say, hey, you group of humans who are into this, can you go figure out what we should do and what we should say, some contingency plans, just in case, just in case? So, I mean, it kind of just depends on your perspective, I think. But there are people out there, Chuck, who are working on this. They're just not really receiving any government funding, and they may or may not be being listened to by governments around the world. But there are people who have us covered to an extent.
Yeah, that's a good preamble.
Thank you.
I guess, you know, the first thing we should talk about, briefly at least, are the couple of ways that this could go down. One of them is far less interesting than the other, which is to say, if we find evidence of primitive life, let's say the Mars rover finds, and there has been some promising evidence of life on Mars, but if we find like a mold or some weird, you know, virus or just microbes or anything on Mars, not super exciting, but they still have to sort of prepare how they would handle that. And they have talked about that kind of thing. And they basically have said that if that happened, there would be like a joint press conference and all the scientists would be involved. And then they would start studying that stuff. I think the real money and sort of the fun of this discussion comes when we talk about intelligent life.
Right.
Because, you know, that's the money topic, is something more like Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
No, definitely. But there's a little more on discovering primitive life. What you just described with that press conference, that already happened back in 1996 with the ALH 84001 meteorite that turned out to be a chunk of 4.5 billion year old Mars, basically, that had broken off at some point and landed in Antarctica. And there is multiple circumstantial evidence on this rock that suggests that a magnetic microbe inhabited this rock at some point, that maybe within, you know, 4.5 billion years ago, there was microbial life on Mars, and we have evidence of it. There's a lot of people out there who are you know, very well-versed on this, who say it's still not proof of life. It's still all just circumstantial evidence that, yeah, put together is pretty convincing, but it's not convincing enough to say, yes, there's life out there. But it's still up for debate, even all these years later. So that press conference with the scientists who discovered it, with skeptics who present the opposite side, like, that has actually been put into practice before. But yes, I agree with you. Finding the like intelligent life elsewhere, what are commonly referred to as extraterrestrial intelligences or ETIs, which sounds way smarter than just saying the aliens.
Yeah.
Those are, sure that does. Is, that that's the money contact for sure.
Right. And, you know, within that becomes a whole host of issues, and we're going to just kind of talk about all those, because there are a lot of things at play here. You know, one is, like, we have no idea what that could look like. We have no idea if, you know, and we'll talk, you know, all throughout this about different ways we might try and communicate or pick up communication from them. But we have no idea if that would even be possible, or if they even have brains like we do that could process any kind of communication like we do. So there's just a lot of speculation when it comes to stuff like this. And I think that some of it probably has been informed by the movies a little bit, right?
Yeah, I think it absolutely has been informed by not just movies, but like the science fiction genre of like books.
And rom-coms.
For sure. A little bit of definitely maybe in there. but yes, but the reason why is because science fiction writers have like a really long upstanding history of making fairly accurate predictions or figuring out, you know, paradoxes, weird solutions to issues that, you know, normal scientists aren't necessarily thinking about. And they've contributed to the field. So it makes sense that we would kind of lean on science fiction to come up with some of these, or let it influence us too.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of smart people thinking about this stuff. There's a gentleman named Jacob Hock-Mizra, who works at Penn State University, go mm-hmm. Nittany Lions, mm-hmm. And is an astronomer there, and said basically, and this is in an interview with Live Science, said, you know, what we would probably do if we did spot some sort of intelligent life is we should probably slow our roll and just sort of watch them for a while from a distance, try and gather information, learn as much as we can, and then maybe at some point, before we even send humans, send out like a robot or something.
Right. So what he's talking about,
our best robot.
Right. What he's talking about bears a really strong resemblance to a military document from the 50s that no one has a copy of, but has been written of by people who supposedly have read it before,
right,
back in the day. It's called Seven Steps to Contact. And it was basically that plan. You know, we find something, we sit and observe it from a distance, we get a little closer. There is a procedure where we abduct a member of that species or whatever, if we can, to like learn what we can from them.
We
announce our presence and then we try to communicate, right? And communicating using a probe or some sort of like computer makes a lot of sense, but it leads us to a really important kind of rule of thumb in this field. And that is that if we humans have come up with it, there's a really good chance that an advanced civilization that we will come in contact with has actually done it already. So if we've decided that a space probe is probably the best way to contact people, that's probably what we should be looking for, because that's probably what they will actually do.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, it's sort of a heady thing to think about, but the idea is that they would be an advanced, like way more advanced civilization than we are. Mm-hmm. It's sort of an assumption that if they contact us, or if we can make contact with them, that they're way far ahead of us in technology, and that they have actually survived beyond where we are now, which is technological adolescence. I mean, it seems like we've done a lot, but, you know, Livia points out that we've only been communicating, you know, via radio for like 100 years.
Right.
So like we're super, super young. So the idea is that if there is something out there, they're way more advanced. They've survived beyond that. They have technology that is, they have advanced that did not end up killing them. So they survived what's called the Great Filter, mm-hmm. Which we're not even, I don't even know how, you know better than I am. How close are we to approaching that?
The predictions are within the next 100 years. If we can survive the next 100 years, we might be okay.
Of like advancing tech to the point where tech then takes over and wipes us out.
Yeah. So if we can survive that, the Great Filter, that means that we'll have such a mastery of technology that we can defend ourselves from extinction in any form, natural, self-imposed, whatever. We'll have such a mastery of technology that it can't wipe us out and we can't be wiped out. And so the lifespan of humans could go on for billions of years. So if we detect an advanced civilization, what they tell us, Chuck, is that it's possible to make it through the Great Filter, because we don't know if that's the case or not. All the evidence we have is that we're the only intelligent life in the universe. So that raises the question, are we the only intelligent life in the universe? Because all other intelligent life has destroyed itself as it's tried to go through the Great Filter.
Right.
And if so, does that mean we're about to destroy ourselves because we're about to go through the Great Filter?
Or was there never any?
Or was it already in the past? Was there some other stage in evolution that we've already gone through? And so if we come in contact with an advanced civilization, they show us that the Great Filter is probably behind us, and we have a long, happy, technologically advanced life ahead of us for our species.
Right. We should probably break, but before we do, I do want to mention that that same Jacob Hawk Mizra also points out kind of the obvious, but we do need to mention it, that they may are like this whole idea that we could be out there watching them potentially. Mm-hmm. They may already be out there watching us.
Right.
And we just don't know about it. And then we would be in a reactive mode rather than a proactive mode. And it's just something to think about. We're not like trying to say aliens, man, but just because we don't know it's out there yet doesn't mean that they don't know that we're out there.
No, and it's probably not aliens if we're being observed. It's probably a probe of some sort. And the spot du jour that people are suggesting where it would be hiding out is in a co-orbital asteroid out in the asteroid belt that has the same orbit as Earth around the sun but doesn't orbit Earth. And that would provide a really great hidden spot to check out Earth and kind of keep tabs on us.
Because who would be crazy enough to fly their spaceship into an asteroid field?
Well, what's really exciting is like we'll probably be mining asteroids in like the next 20, 30, 50 years.
So
if that's the case, we would find that probe.
And possibly Han Solo.
That's right. Super old Han Solo with a single diamond earring for some reason.
Right. All right, let's take that break, and we will come back and talk about a topic that we previously covered, SETI, right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, as every parent knows, kids seem to be everywhere all at once, and it's really tough for even the most watchful moms and dads to protect their little ones from every single thing.
Yeah, Duracell understands this, and that's why they're deeply committed to lithium coin battery safety. Lithium coin batteries power a bunch of important things around people's homes, including things young children may have access to. So Duracell not only educates parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of lithium coin battery safety, they also make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them.
Even Duracell's packaging is child secure and designed to avoid accidental opening. Because they believe their products should provide more than just power. They should also provide peace of mind. You can learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes. Hey friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true. And customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep. This year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right. And Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit Ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at PurdueGlobal.edu.
All right. We have a whole episode on SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Was that one at Comic-Con?
No, because we did a UFO one at Comic-Con. Oh, okay. I think that's the one you're thinking of.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Those are always fun. I enjoyed those.
Definitely.
The Comic-Cons, that is. Right. They were always fun because we had a mix of like stuff you should know, listeners, but also sort of arms crossed nerds.
It entertained me.
Yeah, that ended up liking what we did generally.
Yeah, so I just have to say, now anytime I hear Comic-Con, have you seen Love on the Spectrum US, the new season of Love on the Spectrum?
I never saw the old edition.
Oh, you got to see
or
it.
Or the new one.
So there's a new one, and there's one regular person. I want to say character, but it's like, you know, real life.
Sure.
So there's one person on it. Her name's Danny, and she's like super into animation and is just laser focused on finding a partner who is equally into animation as she is, which is really tough because she's really into it. But one of her first questions in any one of the dates she goes on is, have you heard of Comic-Con, or do you feel you would ever want to go to Comic-Con or something similar to that? That's it's really nice. It's super cute.
I think you can say cast member. I think that still covers reality.
Oh, it does? Okay, yes. Yeah. So one of the cast members named Danny.
Yeah. All right. So SETI, like I said, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. You can listen to that full episode. Mm-hmm. There is a body, a key body for SETI called the International Academy of Astronautics. And they are non-governmental, and they were founded in 1960. And what they try to do is bring together experts from all over the world. I think there are 77 member countries at this point. Mm-hmm. It is UN recognized, so it's not just, you know, a bunch of crackpots out there right. talking about aliens.
Yeah.
And they helped establish some protocols in the late 80s and then updated them in 2010. Just sort of some guidelines about how to handle it if SETI did find something.
Yeah, and they're really kind of basic and boring even when you stop yeah. and think you're talking about discovering and searching for extraterrestrial intelligence. But it's good that they did this. They provided a baseline so that if you're a scientist working in this field, you know, oh, I can speak to the press, or, oh, I haven't really confirmed this discovery, so I shouldn't announce it yet. Like, there's just really basic guidelines that I think if you are in the grip of having discovered something like this, it would be really helpful to be able to refer to them, I think.
Yeah, and I think what's promising about these guidelines is they talk a lot about being honest and open with the press, like you said, and working together with people from all scientists from all over the world and forming task groups and not jumping the gun. And like if you know, in the movies, if you get the computer screen pops up an alien signal, mm-hmm. like the first thing you do is type back an answer. Like they say, no, don't type back any answer. You are not the guy in the chair. Right. What we need to do is like take our time with this stuff and consult everybody, including the UN, on like best next steps.
Right. The guy in the chair who's big, sweaty, bearded, and has a really affectionate relationship with the heroine who's actually interested in the male lead.
Yeah, you just described me right now, except that guy has on a shirt.
Right. So you've got what? You've got searching. You do it transparently. You're supposed to communicate with the public. And as we'll see, that's, you know, if you think about it, if you pay any kind of attention to science journalism, there's all sorts of discussion and talk about searching the stars for extraterrestrial intelligence these days. And that is part of this protocol. Like, keep the public informed. Tell them everything you're doing. Tell them what you're finding. And then later on, as we'll see, tell them how excited they should be about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess we should talk about that. They actually have a scale that they've developed to gauge how excited the general public would be mm-hmm. about finding something out. And it's called the Rio Scale. And it was proposed by astronomers Ivan Almar of Hungary and Jill Tarter of the United States in 2000. And it's kind of funny. It's based off the, or at least modeled on the Chirino scale, which is a scale of like the effects of an asteroid hitting the Earth. But it's how excited would the public be? And what's funny about it, it's a 0 to 10. And one of the examples that Livia gives is, all right, let's say they found a pretty foolproof report mm-hmm. that they found of a signal from potentially intelligent life, but they found it in the archives. Like, hey, we dug this up from 2002 mm-hmm. and it's confirmed. And it was a signal of alien life trying to speak to us. Mm-hmm. That ranks a 2 out of 10.
Right. It's two is nominally low importance.
I just think that's so telling of people in their like, having to be so in the moment. Like, when did this happen? Oh, okay, yawn.
Right, right. So it's not just like how excited the public will be. It's also how excited you should tell the public to be, like how important right. the finding this is, right? So right. you would turn around, and it's still, it strikes me as really weird too, that, hey, we found a beacon that we've confirmed is from an intelligent life outside of our galaxy, but it's not that important. That's yeah, weird. I
mean, the wow signal wasn't the whatevs signal. Nice. Like, they were excited about it. They included an exclamation point.
Right.
I should point out, though, that same signal, if they found that, like, right now, tomorrow, they said that would rank a 7 out of 10. So it would be newsier, I guess.
Right. So 7 is high importance. And then 10 is, oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
That's that level of importance.
Yeah. Well, which is potentially, like, panic level, right?
It is, because basically you've got a you essentially have contact is what a 10 would be, or a signal that is coming to us from our solar system that we can like study. It's all about how credible and reliable it is. And the first Rio scale that was introduced in 2000, I think you said, that was updated here or there, I think, in 2003. And then in 2018, I believe, there was an update to it, so much so that they call it Rio 2.0. It was led by Duncan Forgan of the Center for Exoplanet Science at the University of St. Andrew in Scotland. Go Scotland. Go golfers, I'm sure, is the University of St. Andrew mascot. Sure. And so he and company updated the Rio scale to make it even more robust. And again, it all comes down to how credible is this information, right? Like how credible is this discovery? Can we study it? What do other scientists in the field think about it? And you put all this together and then you say, actually, this is low importance. This is high importance. This is as important as it comes. And then you tell the public, we found something and the importance of it is as important as it comes, or it's not that important.
Which would be a 10, which is she dances on the sand.
I don't know what that means, but I like the sound of it, Chuck.
All right. Should I point it out or should I let you just discover it later or never at all?
I think,
or maybe someone will email and tell you.
No, point it out. I hate it when people email to tell me stuff that I missed.
It was a dad joke, an 80s kid of the 80s dad joke.
Okay. All right. I'm getting
nothing?
Warmer.
You got nothing?
Still nothing. No. I've got maybe Mr.
No, you're close. It's the Rio scale. She dances on the sand
would
be the highest
level. Yeah, that is great. I can't believe I missed
is it?
That. Sorry.
All right.
It was great. It's a great song.
Oh, okay. Bad joke,
great song. So any reference
to
it is by proxy great.
Should we talk about Seta?
Yeah, just one more thing before we pass on from the Rio scale. Like one of the important things is the reason why the scale is so varied from like low importance to she dances on the sand importance is you're supposed to communicate this to the public. If it's low importance, that doesn't mean don't bother. It means go tell the public we found this, but it's actually not that big of a deal. It's instructing astronomers how to present this to the public, you know, how excited you should tell them to be, how important it is.
Yeah.
And then also before we go on to SETA, once you actually have a detection, there's that SETI Permanent Committee from the IAA. They have protocols for when you do actually confirm you have detected an alien signal or presence somehow.
Right. So it's all sort of set up.
Yeah. And so if they're broadcasting on the electromagnetic band, which we are out there looking for, so hopefully that's what they're using, that band would be protected. Everybody else would get kicked off of that band, and then that band would be studied as intensively as an electromagnetic band has ever been studied in the history of humanity.
I love that.
And then lastly, Chuck, there's a protocol not to respond. You're the guy in the chair, like you said, you don't get to respond, but so neither do the astronomers, neither do like the IAA. Like it's meant to become a international global discussion on how humanity should reply to this. And that's based on the idea that how we reply is going to have a really big impact on how the conversation goes from that point on.
Well, yeah, because what we don't know, and one of the things that I think would be the most pins and needles sort of thing to find out is whether these ETIs are what they call selfish or whether they're universalists. So are they here to help us and say, you know, we have all this great technology, then we can help you out. By the way, we have a cure for cancer. You might be looking for that.
Sure.
Or are they, well, I guess that would be the universalist, or right. are they selfish and are they here to conquer us? And there was a researcher that you dug up that pointed out something kind of key, which is, sure, we wonder if they're selfish or universalist, but I don't know if anyone's noticed, everything we talk about is how it benefits or is bad for us. So we are definitely on the selfish side, because nobody at all is talking about how we might be able to possibly help them.
Right. And it sounds pretty goofy and childish to say, like, you know, oh, they want to conquer us or whatever. But there's actually like legitimate reasons an alien intelligence would want to conquer us. They might want our resources to exploit for their own uses. That's a big deal.
We love corn.
They may also basically have a their own protocol where anytime they meet intelligent life, they snuff it out because they don't want any potential future rivals to come along. And it's not worth their while to investigate that life further to see if it ever would be a rival. So they just wipe it out wherever they encounter it. So yes, it sounds childish at first, but when you start to think about it, it becomes a little eye-popping, because there are universal, you would expect universal reasons for them to harm us. And they're predicated on the idea that natural selection is a universal phenomenon. That all life, or more to the point, no life just comes fully formed into being out of nowhere. It progresses from other forms of life and develops along the way. And so it makes sense that it would happen elsewhere in the universe. And if that's the case, then yeah, you could make a really good case that there are destructive intelligences out there that just wipe out competition and rivalry or rivals.
Or, yeah, the other option too, though, is that's hanging out there is they may have initially been selfless or universalist or benevolent, and then they either accidentally infect us somehow. I mean, we've seen that if you look to our own past of when, you know, conquering colonialists invaded foreign lands and brought their disease with them. I mean, it's not a far stretch to think that could happen, you know, on an interplanetary or I guess, interplanetary level. Or that doesn't happen and they come here and they want to help us out, but then they study us for a while and hang out and they're like, you people are awful. Right. Either they undermine us some way by accident or on purpose, or then they decide to wipe us out.
Right. Because they place a higher value on, you know, life in general, and they're like, these guys are actually a threat to life in general. So maybe if they're utilitarians, it would make sense for them to eliminate us to save more life, you know?
Right.
Because again, like if you're, let's say we actually did encounter an advanced civilization, their perspective is much different than ours. We have no idea how long humans will be around. And frankly, those of us living today in the 21st century probably have a shorter idea of what the human lifespan is than people in the past did, right? So they're coming at it like these guys might be around forever and might, who knows how technologically advanced they could become. So they could see it as like beneficial to the greater good by getting rid of us now. Like going back and strangling Hitler in his crib when he was a baby or something like that. That would be their opportunity to do that, because we would be utterly defenseless against a civilization that was so advanced it could come visit us.
But
or even
baby
send
Hitler,
probes.
But baby Hitler's the human race.
Exactly, in this case, is really sad, but yeah.
Right. Let's just move on to Seta, which we were going to do minutes ago, but I told you this would be freewheeling, everybody.
It was so freewheeling, I have one other thing.
Do you really? Go ahead.
I have two other things, actually. So we actually have legitimate reason to believe that they wouldn't be a conquering type because, number one, they're very long-lived. That's our assumption, right?
Okay.
And if they're very long-lived, they're probably a cooperative society, because non-cooperative societies fight amongst themselves and can end up wiping themselves out. They're much likelier to. So if we encounter an advanced civilization that is very, very long-lived, has been around for millions or billions of years as a species, they probably are super peaceful because they learned along the way and maybe even evolved along the way to cooperate. So it would be more likely that they would be those universalists that we met.
Okay.
And then there's one other example of life here on Earth where there was like positive contact, not necessarily between societies, but between an encoded version of a society and a new society. And that was when the Spanish Moors of the 12th century discovered lost Greek knowledge, and they turned around and introduced it to Europe, and it brought Europe out of the medieval or dark ages into the Renaissance. It was triggered just by this knowledge that had been lost. So you can imagine that if we were suddenly bestowed with a tremendous amount of new knowledge, who knows where we could go with it?
Well, yeah, and that brings up a point, which is if we're talking about what might happen if a super advanced civilization got in touch with us and you want to do that brain experiment, one way to sort of go about that might be to look back at our past and say, well, what's happened in the history of humanity when the equivalent of that has happened, which is like, let's say, a more advanced, and it might as well have been aliens contacting humans, mm-hmm. but a much more advanced European nation, like going into a primitive tribe in, you know, deep in the Amazon. And the answer isn't pretty if you don't know anything about world history.
Yeah.
So if you want to look to the past of how humans have kind of operated when they're the advanced civilization, maybe a little humility going forward in what might happen to us is in order, you know?
Right, for sure. And we'll talk about societal impacts, but that really kind of sheds a little light on that, foreshadows it at least, that like whether we wanted to feel humble or not, we probably would if we encountered an advanced civilization.
All right. I think we beat around the bush so far that we can actually take a break.
Okay.
And then talk about Seta. Seta, poor Seta is just sitting out there.
It's a fun bush to beat, though, isn't it?
It really is. I like this kind of stuff.
Good.
All right. We'll be right back with Seta, I promise.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on! Hey friends, as every parent knows, kids seem to be everywhere all at once, and it's really tough for even the most watchful moms and dads to protect their little ones from every single thing.
Yeah, Duracell understands this, and that's why they're deeply committed to lithium coin battery safety. Lithium coin batteries power a bunch of important things around people's homes, including things young children may have access to. So Duracell not only educates parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of lithium coin battery safety, they also make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them.
Even Duracell's packaging is child secure and designed to avoid accidental opening, because they believe their product should provide more than just power. They should also provide peace of mind. You can learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes. Hey friends, did you know that it's estimated that 85% of all customer service interactions are automated?
Yeah, it's true, and customers are the lifeblood of all business. So you probably don't want to put that responsibility in the hands of a robot. And that's why thousands of business owners call Ruby and hire them.
That's right. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special.
Yep, you definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would.
That's right. Finding someone who cares about your business as much as you do feels impossible at times, but the team at Ruby are experts in providing the best customer experience and turn every ring into a relationship.
Yep, this year can be your best year yet. Small, efficient changes can make a huge impact on your bottom line.
That's right, and Ruby answers all of your calls live from right here in the U.S. They'll take messages, answer questions, route calls, and much more. Visit ruby.com, or better yet, give them a call at 844-900-RUBY.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Okay, Chuck, SETI.
I got a few more points to make.
So if SETI is the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, SETA is the search for extraterrestrial artifacts. Because again, there's a lot of people out there who say the best way to explore the universe is through machines that we deploy and then send back information, and maybe are so advanced that they can actually serve as ambassadors for the civilization.
Right. So not only maybe that should be our way forward for us, but with SETA, it's a search for extraterrestrial artifacts, is maybe we should also really, really keep an eye out, not just because typically we've been listening for things. And they said maybe we should also be looking for evidence of a probe. As far as us doing it, there are some benefits. One is that maybe it would they wouldn't know where we're coming from. Like, we're not literally sending out a beacon from where we are just in case they are dangerous.
Sure.
So if they found our probe, unless it was stamped made in the USA, which it probably would be.
With a map to get to the USA.
Dallas, Texas. That they wouldn't know where we are. So there is potential benefit there. But I think SETA is interesting. The idea that we should be looking for stuff out there, maybe in those asteroid fields.
Yeah. So back in the mid-80s, a couple of SETI researchers, Robert Freitas Jr. and Francisco Valdez, they basically said we can conceive of three different classes of artifacts that you could, an intelligence, an extraterrestrial intelligence might send out. And they weren't talking about this kind of von Neumann probe or something like that. They were saying as far as detection goes, it would be put into three categories. The first one is ones that actively seek out other intelligences.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is ones that avoid detection. And then the third one are ones where the extraterrestrial intelligence is indifferent to whether we find it or not. And after examining it, they said we should be looking exclusively for class three artifacts, because class one, we would have detected already because they would have come and found us if they were seeking attention. And then class two, we're never going to find because this is an advanced civilization. So we would just guess that they would be able to keep us from knowing that we were being watched.
Yeah, like maybe they have figured out invisibility, something as basic as that.
Sure, yeah. So we should look for the ones where they're like, who cares if they find this old space junk?
Right.
And that's actually what Oumuamua is thought to be by at least one astronomer. You know about that?
Excuse you? Oumuamua, was that the guy that's working on the Galileo project now, Loeb?
Yeah, Avi Loeb.
All right, well, yeah, to talk about Oumuamua, then we'll talk to about the Galileo project, I think.
Okay, so Oumuamua means, I think, like, visitor, and it was found in 2017. We're not quite sure what it is. It's probably a hunk of a planet, but the one thing everybody agrees on, it's not from our solar system. It's from another star system, because it doesn't move like anything in our star system does. But it supposedly has been observed exhibiting gravitational acceleration, non-gravitational acceleration, meaning it's accelerating faster than gravity would suggest it would on its own, right? Which means like it might be propelled by something.
Which is crazy to think about. And that Avi Loeb we were talking about is a Harvard astronomer and came out and was one of the only people that came out and says, you know, straight up, I think this is alien technology. Mm-hmm. And so Avi Loeb is who launched the Galileo project in 2021, which is the only sort of active SETA thing that we have going right now. And right now, they are. There was the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon report last year from the U.S. Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that's basically, I mean, they were meeting about that even just recently. You know, the government, the U.S. government, that is finally saying, like, all right, we don't need to be, like, embarrassed about talking about this stuff. There yeah. are things that we've seen that we can't identify. They are unidentified flying objects that, like, our military has seen, like, our best pilots are reporting about. So we should start talking about this. And part of that was this report, the Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon mm-hmm. report, and the Galileo project is sort of combing through that. Also has some telescopes going now, watching for objects. I'm not sure, like, how vast that is at this point, but it's just launched a year ago, so I'm sure they're getting going.
Yeah, and we should say Avi Loeb is viewed alternatively as a genius or a maverick or a rogue or a crackpot.
Right.
But he does have, you know, legitimate bona fides. He's not one of those guys who's like, you know, he parks his camper on the campus of Harvard, so he's right. a Harvard astronomer. Like, he's a legitimate, he was the head of the astronomy department for quite a while, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he thinks, from what I read, that Oumuamua is a billions of year old defunct alien probe that mm-hmm. no longer works or operates and just happened to stumble into our solar system for us to find accidentally.
What does it look like? I didn't even look it up. I should have.
It looks like a kind of cigar shaped. It's apparently between 300 and 3,000 feet long and 115 and 548. Feet thick.
I'm looking at it now. You were generous with the cigar. It looks like a joint.
Okay.
Straight up.
Yeah, it looks like a spliff.
It does.
So yeah, it looks like an alien spliff is probably what it is.
Maybe they're sending us a message.
I've never used the word spliff before in my life until just now.
Yeah, I don't say that word either.
No.
It's way too hip for us, I think.
Oh, is that hip? It didn't used to be.
Oh, I don't know. I think it was European maybe at first.
Right. Didn't used to be.
Yeah, I don't know. We are so uncool. I have no idea.
So, Chuck, if we run into somebody or somebody finds us or we just detect life and figure out a way to communicate with it, we're going to immediately hit a wall.
Yeah.
Because the idea that we'll be able to communicate with an extraterrestrial intelligence presumes a lot of factors and variables that would have to be in place that may or may not. And if you take one or two of them out, we're totally up the creek as far as communicating goes.
Yeah, that's why I always loved Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because mm-hmm. even as a kid, I remember thinking how cool it was that they didn't just like hold up a sign that said, "Hey, how are you?" And that they used
want a spliff? This,
and that they used, you know, the do 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 and the mm-hmm. lights. I thought that was kind of cool because that mm-hmm. is, you know, we don't know if they even have the same senses that we have
right.
as far as hearing something or seeing something. There is a book that someone put out, a German mathematician named Hans Freudenthal, called Linkos, L-I-N-C-O-S, colon, Design of a Language for Cosmic Intercourse. And by that, he means speaking to one another, I think. Uh-huh. And this, it's kind of funny. Libby included a quote from an astrophysicist that said, it's the most boring book I've ever read. Logarithm tables are cool compared to it. And it sounds like it's not anything you'd want to read, but it is. Linkos is this radio wave language that this guy came up with that basically conveys symbols from math and science, from Latin, symbolic logic. And it starts very fundamental and then gets like, these are numbers and they're conveyed to you through pulses. And then it gets a little more advanced as it goes. Not to say that Linkos is like, everyone's like, oh, we should just use Linkos. Mm-hmm. But it is to say that very, very smart people have thought about, like, how do we even think about communicating with these things?
So from what I can tell, like, you could use Linkos. It would be something that we could try to use.
Yeah,
it'd be a start. It's like that established, you know. And that book actually kicked off a field of study that's still around today, and I think just kind of getting going, called xenolinguistics, which is basically the idea of how do you speak to a culture that you don't share anything in common with.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah, because if we talk to an extraterrestrial intelligence, it'll be unlike talking to anything that we've ever tried to talk to before, including non-human animals, because non-human animals have shared a lot of the same experiences that we have here on Earth. I saw it pointed out in one paper, humans share 50% of our DNA with a carrot, right? Mm-hmm. These intelligences, we would have basically nothing in common with, no shared experiences.
Right.
And like you said, we might not even have the same senses. And so when you start to see like what's stacked up against us, like what if they don't communicate using their eyes or their mouths or sound, and they use magnets instead, or magnetism. Right. It would be totally lost on us. We might not even sense it in any way, shape, or form. And even if we did, we wouldn't know how to put it into whatever thought they were trying to convey.
Yeah, I mean, there are very smart people. There's a gentleman named John Billingham, who is a leader in that field, and a social psychologist named Roger Haynes, who have worked a lot with historians and scientists and psychologists about how to do this and the repercussions. But there are people like Billingham that have said, hey, this is likely impossible. Like, we should think about these scenarios, but we should all prepare ourselves for the fact that we just may not be able to communicate with them at all, ever.
Right. And even if we do, we would be communicating with them on intergalactic distances.
Yeah.
Which is Carl Sagan put out, like, even if we communicate with somebody 50 light years away, which is pretty close considering how big the universe is, our conversations back and forth would still take 100 Earth years. So not only would we have to gather everybody together to come up to some consensus on what we're going to say, uh-huh. We would have to keep that consensus and that level of coordination and cooperation going over multiple generations just to have one back and forth.
Yeah, like people are working on this and they know that their great granddaughter is going to follow through on it.
Yeah.
Or the hope is that they will.
Right. Which is kind of cool if you think about it. It is something that could really bring humanity together. It could also be just another thing that divides us further, because I mean, when's the last time we came to a global consensus on anything, you know? Have we ever?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. it is an interesting thought experiment, though, to think about. And these are the things that these groups of people that John Billingham and Roger Haynes get together and they talk about this stuff, is to explore the idea of, like, is there, like, some of the first things that we should want to find out is there a universal set of ethics or mm-hmm. morals? Mm-hmm. Do they believe in something like a god like we do? Did they evolve at all? Are they, do they only look at things as like predators and prey? Like, are we screwed to begin with? Mm-hmm. Would they mirror us at all? So it's all really, really heady and interesting, I think. And I just think it's cool that people are out there thinking of this stuff.
Yeah, and there are people thinking of it for sure, but probably not enough. And in 2020, a group of researchers got together, led by Catherine Denning and Stephen Dick, and they created a white paper that was signed by NASA researchers, SETI members, other experts, who basically said, hey, we need to be throwing a lot more funding at it. We need to be doing a lot more research. And this is important. And they cited the World Economic Forum back in 2010. Every year, the World Economic Forum puts out a global risks paper. Mm-hmm. And in 2013, they included a list of X factors, which are possibilities in the not too distant future that could happen to humanity that we just couldn't possibly predict for, especially because we're not doing anything to try to predict. And one of those X factors was being contacted or discovering life off of Earth.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty high on the list. Do you know the other ones?
Yeah, runaway climate change.
Of course.
Profound cognitive enhancement.
You're like, I have them tattooed on my forearm. What else?
In elfish. rogue geoengineering projects. That could be a problem because there's actually like rich people thinking about doing stuff like that. And then the cost of living longer, which I found fascinating. But it's true. Yeah. Like we can barely support humans through age 80 now, socially speaking. How are we going to support people if that life expectancy doubles in the next like 20, 30, 40, 50 years?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Hey, I got to say, if you're probably too shy to plug your own show, but if this kind of stuff interests you guys, you should definitely, if you haven't already, listen to The End of the World with Josh Clark, your 10-part series. 10, right?
Yeah, 10. Thank you.
It's great, and it's very heady and smart and thought-provoking, so I'm plugging it.
That is very nice. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate it.
It lives on. It's still there.
It is. It's still there to go be listened to if you want to listen to it for free wherever you get podcasts.
It's not old news. It's free.
Yeah. No, it's definitely still out there because the world hasn't ended yet. That's what I always say.
Somebody should jump on that and do a limited series documentary on it.
I've talked to a couple people about it, and it just hasn't ever quite worked out. So I'm still open to the idea for sure.
Well, that just goes to show how hard it is to get any TV project off the ground, which we know.
It really is.
But if anyone out there does that kind of stuff, you should get in touch with Josh and do it.
Man, Chuck, I owe you a fiver at least for this.
Well, just don't quit the show if that happens and we're all good.
I definitely won't. This is where my heart is, man.
Good.
Work-wise.
Yeah, sure. Didn't have to point that out, but sure.
I didn't want everybody to think I was like a total weirdo loser, you know?
Right.
He loves work like that? Jeez.
Yeah, usually home is where the heart is, Josh.
Right. You got your priorities mixed up. You got anything else?
Nothing else.
All right, everybody. Well, since Chuck said nothing else and plugged The End of the World with Josh Clark quite nicely, that means it's time for listener mail.
That's right. And there's nothing like a nice, intelligent, heady discussion followed by a pedantic, you said the wrong words email. So this is a nice guy, though. I like Danny. Hey, guys, longtime listener. He was very squeamish about even mentioning these things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a longtime listener. I love everything you guys do, and I hate that I am giving in to pedantry, but the amazing Free Press episode was all I could take. Naturally, with that topic, I believe Chuck said people's voices were being squashed.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say it, Chuck. The word is quashed, and the reason I hate to say it is that squashed is a much more fun word to say.
Yeah.
I'll probably still say squashed, because I just like saying it. You're not off the hook, though, either, my friend. While I'm on it, so sorry, I have to get it off my chest that it bugs me when Josh says to look up contemporary articles about a topic, meaning from the topic's time period.
Mm-hmm.
This is an amazing insight, but the word he's looking for is contemporaneous.
Oh, boy.
Contemporary will always mean articles from right now. Contemporaneous means from the same time as that topic.
Can't you see Danny like at his computer and his hands are shaking because he's using all his might to stop himself? He's like, can't
I know.
Resist correcting.
I think that was the deal. He says, please don't roast me for being a pedant. You guys are a true inspiration. I wouldn't say anything about it if I thought it would offend you, and I know how graceful you are about such things. So Danny really set us up where we had to
be. He really did. Please be nice.
Yeah, good email, Danny. Thanks for sending that in.
It was. And Danny, if I start using contemporaneous in reference to articles from a certain time, it's because of you.
That's right. And we, as evidence that we didn't squash your voice, we are open to criticism.
That's very good, Chuck. If you want to be like Danny, just don't. Just send us an email about something else. You can wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, and send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.